All right, Mr. South, I flipped the tape over, and we're just going to go right back to our questions here. Did you have any thoughts about your own mortality, or were you confident that you were going to survive that battle, or did you think at all about that, or did you not even think about it?
Never give it a thought. I felt I would come through. I don't know why, but coming in, our LSP got stuck on the coral reef, so we had to swim or sink. So we did. It was up to my noodle here, and Japanese machine gun kept putting those bees over our head. And I remember everybody, one or two yelled, "Keep your head down, you fool." Some of them would, when you get out in shallow water, come up, you learn to walk with it right here. Until you got close enough so you could tremble. But it was about roughly 200 yards of wading we had to do. That was a little anxious moments, I must say.
So the craft you were coming in on, it got stuck on a coral reef?
Yeah, on the rocks, and couldn't get off.
But it wasn't hit or anything?
No, it wasn't hit. So I think the machine gun probably put a few holes in it. I don't know.
Okay. So you had to go over the side?
Yep.
And then you went down into the water, and you had to swim with all your equipment?
And it's a few feet is all I swam. You had to keep the rifle, of course, on top.
Right.
Everything else soaked, but you had footing most all the way. Just one or two places was deeper than I was, because I was pretty short anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we made it.
Okay.
Nobody drowned.
Nobody drowned from your ship?
Not from that outfit.
Okay.
Your backpack with all your extra clothes, your blanket, and your ponchos, and of course your ammo belts and the grenades, and your rifle, and your K-bar, and of course some rations. You had 3 days' supply of ink packed in there, mm-hmm. K-rations.
Did you have any personal effects that you carried with you, like any letters or anything
else? Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Because they said you won't be doing any writing, so left everything back at camp.
Okay. Did you have any, what kind of articles of clothing did you carry? Did you have any spare pairs of socks or anything like that that you carried with you?
Yes, socks and foot powder, especially, and a couple of pair of underwear, and a jacket, and pants.
Okay. Did you have any canteens of water that you carried on you?
Two canteens of water.
Two canteens, and were those like the quart size?
Yeah, the quart size.
How long would a canteen of water last you? Because I know it's pretty hot on those islands, wasn't it?
It was. Two of them wouldn't make it through a day when it was a hot day, and we had a lot of work to do. And thankfully, they always had water enough to refill up.
Okay. What kind of perceptions did you have about the enemy? Before you hit the beach, what kind of thoughts did you have, and maybe even your friends, what was the view of them? Were they seen as kind of, did you admire their toughness, or did you think they were subpar? Or
whose toughness? The enemy's?
The enemy, Japanese.
I was shocked when I saw men, women, and kids. They were so small, and they looked so harmless. And then I saw my first captured Japanese soldier, and I thought, he's just a kid. But I remember my reaction when one of my buddies were going through a little town, and we had to search the houses. And he went to a house, and he come back, "Well, I got them all." "So what'd you get?" "Well," he said, "there was a bunch of those..." I won't use the word he called him in there, and I got them all. He had a BAR, an automatic rifle. 14 kids, men, women, and old men were in there, and he shot every last one of them. I was so mad I could have shot him. I cussed him, I remember that. He said, "Well, they're the enemy, Harry. What's the matter with you?" I said, "Which one of those kids threatened you the most?" Well, he didn't say anymore. Walked off, so I shut my mouth.
Why do you think that he did that?
I have no idea. It just shocked me. Because our officers never encouraged that stuff.
Do you remember any, like, films or pictures or briefings that kind of depicted the Japanese soldier and what he was like?
Yes, they depicted one that I remember, their brutality. I don't know where they got this, but it showed actual cases, like especially from China. Because, you know, they had invaded China previous to this, and their horrible treatment of the common people and shooting them and bayoneting them and so forth. And maybe that's what inspired some of the hate I had.
Do you remember if there were any kind of stereotypes about the Japanese?
None.
No stereotypes? Okay.
The one thing that they did show us their stupidity in charging a machine gun and barbed wire. I still don't understand that, but maybe with their worship of their emperor, that maybe that's what led to it. But on Tinian, I saw that firsthand. It's unbelievable. Nobody can be that stupid.
Why do you think it was that they would do that? They would just charge him?
You know? I don't know. They charged us one night, a counterattack, and 221 of them counted the bodies the next morning, and we lost one Marine. They actually charged the machine guns, yelling and screaming.
Okay, we're going to go to the beginning of the invasion here.
Of Saipan?
Right.
Yes.
Did you see the Battle of the Philippine Sea?
When no.
You didn't see that?
Nope.
Okay. Did you see the naval bombardment of Saipan?
Yes.
Okay. What did it look like from your vantage point?
I didn't see how anything could be alive afterwards.
So you were confident that the Navy did a good job then?
They did a good job. I saw the bunkers that they had hit right on and blew up, which saved a lot of Marine lives. I saw the ones they didn't get.
Did you get any sleep the night before the invasion?
No.
No?
No.
You were just up most of the night?
Yeah, we were watching the shelling.
Oh, okay. What were the early hours of that morning like? What time did you get up in the morning?
Well, I was up all night. We got our rations, and then they screamed over the loudspeaker, condition red, and a Japanese Zero came over strafing. Well, we were all prepared. They had told us, and remember, you got rifles, use them. We did. It got shot down, not by us, though. All of a sudden it exploded a huge ball of fire. Then a little bit later, another Zero came over. There wasn't supposed to any get through, but a couple of them did get through. And that was make things interesting.
What time did you get your rations that morning? Did you get breakfast? Did they feed you any breakfast?
No breakfast. No, you had your rations the day before.
Okay.
They had passed them out, so next morning you ate them.
Okay. Can you just describe to me the process of getting troops and equipment to shore? Just tell me what it was like and how you got from your ship to the shore.
Well, somebody had to know what they were doing because it went smooth. Every bit of it I saw. The different batteries, the units, to be loaded, to go down at the right time below into the, LST, and get in your landing ship personnel, landing ship tank, whichever one you took, and get to the beach in an orderly manner. I never saw once where they flubbed up. One thing was scary. One of the tanks loaded with troops as it went off the end gate out there went right straight down and never came up. Of course, the men did. They went to the bottom. I don't know what happened, if they've let all the petcocks open or something, but it went down.
But the men got out then?
Yeah, the men come and they were all fished out again. I think we lost a man.
Okay.
But it was orderly.
What type of resistance was there What kind of enemy fire was there when you first came ashore?
There was still machine gun fire, and tanks were still a real threat. They got wiped out, but not before they scared the daylights out of us.
Right. When you landed on the beach, what was your... You were in like a platoon, or were you in a squad, or what was the...
Squad.
You were in a squad, and mm-hmm. how many people, how many Marines was in
there
a squad?
There were 24 of us.
24, okay.
In that group. But it was the men that did handle the guns too, the loading and firing, they were in that squad.
Okay. And what was your job right when you got onto shore? What were you used as an attacking force? Were you, was your job to attack, or what was your job?
No, dig in. First of all, dig in quick. And we all did. And then they, an hour or two later, they give the all clear thing. Then we got up. Then we were to advance to this little town that I told you about. And that's where I saw my first captive Japanese soldier, plus the inhabitants. And that's where this buddy of mine shot all those people. We went for about 2 miles. And then we, right below a ridge of hill, the infantry was just ahead of us about a quarter of a mile. And that's where we set up base camp. And then we, within 2 hours, we were firing.
Okay. So you went into that town, and is that where you set up your
on the other side of the town.
On the other side of the town. And, that, mm-hmm. and you set up your 75mm
yep.
pack there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And at the same time, every 10-15 minutes, ping, a bullet would come overhead. There was a Japanese soldier, too, up in those caves above us, about a quarter of a mile away, and he shot at us for 5 days and never hit anybody.
Did your battery support a particular infantry regiment or...
Yeah, we supported the 2nd Battalion.
Okay. Do you remember where at on the island they were, where they were operating at on the island?
Well, they're the ones that, they helped take the air base, that landing strip they had there, and then they took a left and started up the main island. And the other ones flanked on both sides, the other okay. battalions. They were in the center, the 2nd.
Okay. And you, when you, your squad, is it called a squad that mans a gun, or what, is it called a battery, or what?
We were all part of a battery, but they were a squad.
Okay. Yeah. And then you were part of a squad?
Yeah.
And did you help load the gun, or did...
No.
No?
Mm-hmm.
What, did you have any job to do with the gun at all, or were you...
Well, we took the ammunition they would call. See, the shells have 3 or 4 bags of gunpowder. And for the range they wanted, you'd open it up and take 2 bags out and slap it back together and stack it.
Okay.
Huh. He did that too. Can I insert something that happened at this place?
Sure can.
My buddy Goldie came to me. I said we were right below some caves, about a dozen of them up there. And he showed me a bag of watches, jewelry, revolvers. Beautiful. I said, Goldie, where'd you get that? The caves. I said, we're not supposed to go up there. He said, rules are made to be broken, sap. And he said, I'm going up tomorrow. You want to come along, sap? And I said, I'd have to think about it. But my dad's discipline through my early life paid off. You obey everybody over you, or else you pay the price. And I told him, nope, I'm not going. Well, goodbye, sap. He come back with more goodies than ever. And I wanted the stuff, believe me. He come back the 3rd day and said, now, sap, you ready to go now? Nope, I said, I'm not going. Well, he said, okay, sap. Goldie never came back. And when the island was secured, we went along those same caves, blowing them up. We'd yell in with a microphone first, come out if you're in there, in Japanese. And we come to one cave and there was a pair of boots sticking out. It was Goldie. shot right through the head. I told my dad and mom, thank you for that lesson. They told me to about obey. Well, they said we didn't know if it sunk in or not.
Can you describe to me just kind of, while you were there set up in your position with your unit's gun, what was it like from the time that you got your gun set up to basically when the operation ended? Can you just kind of give me an account? You can take as long as you like and just kind of tell me what the days were like and what you did while you were there on the island.
The days weren't too bad because you kept busy. But the nights got horrible because 3 to a foxhole, 2 had to be awake at all times. So that left very little time for one to sleep while the other 2 watched. That was really hard. And you had to rediscipline yourself. And good thing they had 2 awake because I know more than once I got woke up by somebody hit me on the helmet with that bayonet to wake me up, and I did the same to him. But without it, we couldn't have made it. But while we were there during the day, too, we had to go through the cane fields flushing out Japanese soldiers. That was interesting, but it was kind of sad that every soldier we chased out, not one would surrender. We'd yell them in Japanese, everyone was shot. And we flushed out quite a few in the cane fields.
Did they just didn't want to surrender?
Didn't seem like it. They just run.
Would they run away from you or towards
away
you?
From us.
Okay. And they had their gun in their hand and...
Yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, yell at them twice and they wouldn't stop. So then bang, and that was it. One thing happened that, not humorous, it was silly. But after 10 days of sweating and of no way to clean up, and we were in one place, and we were told that keep your heads down, but a shower came over. It was right by a shack and had an eaves trough. I ran over there and took all of my clothes off and down underneath that eaves trough. My buddy screamed and yelled at me. I don't know why they didn't shoot me. I finally got through and got dressed and came back. I said, I don't know if I want to go in the same hole with you stinkers. They all said, you know, maybe Faust wasn't off so much. But there was shooting going on, believe me, every little bit some shots would fly overhead. It was crazy, but I had to.
So you went 10 days without bathing or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. I also tried to grow a beard, but I couldn't take it anymore. I finally had to shave raw. It itched so bad, it drove me nuts.
Did your body itch at all after that long without being able to clean?
Oh, did it ever itch. Under the arms and in the crotch, good night, you scratch yourself raw.
And were you in, what was the ground like? Was it sand or dirt or what?
Dirt.
Was it dirt that you dug into?
Okay. Too much dust.
How did your mission change at all as the operation progressed?
It changed in this way. I got to see a lot more in helping those that had gotten wounded and taking them to the first aid stations. And then we were allowed a little bit more freedom as the campaign was heading toward the end. My buddy and I one day went up a canyon, and we passed a bunch of caves, and there was a lot of Japanese bodies sticking out of it. And we got past it into a brush patch, and I know I heard it. Something said, stop, turn back. He said he heard the same thing. We turned around, went back, and there sat a wounded Japanese soldier. Of course, I didn't know he was wounded. So I told my buddy, I said, cover me, and I quick ran up to him and pulled him to his feet, head that way, and he stuck his hands in his pocket. Well, I put my gun barrel right up against his head and was going to pull the trigger. And that's where that thing happened that I couldn't explain. All of a sudden, I felt sorry for him, and I didn't want to kill him. That would be murder. So I quickly run my hands over his pocket, picked him up, and drug him out of there. And then I saw he was wounded. I didn't know that. So then we picked him, hauled him back to the first aid station. It was about a mile away. And that's when I got some static. I didn't think I had coming, but boy, did they yell at me, my buddies. You chap lover. Well, I thought I couldn't murder the guy. Well, they didn't understand that, but the doctor said, you did the right thing. This guy will live.
He didn't have any guns or...
Nothing in his pockets. I don't know why he put his hands in his pocket. Hmm. It was the wrong thing to do.
Hmm. But most other Marines would have shot him if he had done that.
And then one more event. One day we were out surveying, a bunch of us, and we saw a Japanese couple, man and woman. She had a baby on her back, and they were right by the cliffs. And so our sergeant, he had Japanese good. I forgot everything but two or three words. Ohayo gozaimasu is all I know anymore. How are you doing? But anyway, he yelled at them, and they stopped. They said, come with us. We'll take care of you, you and your wife and your baby. So they started for us as they did. One of my buddies pulled up and shot, put a bullet right through that little baby. Well, the man took his wife, and over the cliff they went, 200 feet down on the rocks, saw their broken bodies. But my first sergeant, he bawled the daylights out of that guy. He said, what in the world were you thinking of? He said, you nut. Those were not soldiers. Well, he said, they're the enemy. I heard that too many times, but it made me feel good that the sergeant thought the same as I did. It was murder.
How often did stuff like that happen?
More than I'd like to say. It happened different times where that, as I call it, innocent people, some maybe couldn't have been helped. They were with the soldiers. But those that were apart, I saw too many, and I didn't like it.
Did anything happen to that soldier that shot the baby?
No, nothing.
Day to day, as you just went about your duties, did you always feel like you were in danger of being shot or shelled, or did you kind of feel safe? Or where did you spend most of your time? Was it there by your gun that you were by your squad?
Pretty
there?
Much. Well, you were at outpost. Guard duty was always a couple hundred yards from the gun. It seemed like at night. Like I said, the daytime you were kept busy, but of course you always looked over your shoulder all the time. Mm-hmm. You never ceased from that. And at night, sometimes, we did this once. There was four of us in a foxhole. I don't know how that happened. But during the night, one of the guys always carried a Thompson submachine he brought from civilian life, and they let him keep it. Mm. And anyway, we heard a noise crawling toward us. I knew what it was. One of the guys had found a piece of old shovel and took a string attached to it. And at night, he railed in a little at a time. And of course, this guy with the submachine didn't know that.
What would he do?
Going to shoot, grenade, and everything else. And we'd calm him down. We can't hear anything. You know, he'd wake us up when he was on duty. Why he didn't shoot us the next morning when he saw what we had done, I don't know. But he was kind.
Why did that one guy drag the shovel like that? What was he doing? Was he trying to scare people?
It was just a prank.
Oh, okay.
To scare him.
Okay, I see. So, did you ever man any forward observation posts or anything like that? Or
yeah.
You mm-hmm. did?
Okay. Yeah.
And that was
only in training.
Okay.
Never in actual.
Okay. So you stayed back with your gun most of the time, with the 75
pack? Yeah, we were always about a quarter of a mile behind the front lines.
Okay.
Because they didn't have too big a reach, you know.
Okay. How did you adapt personally to the things that you saw on that island? Like when you said that you saw that one soldier kill that baby. How did you change to get through all of that?
Well, I think the training is the big part, because they said, remember, one Marine will never defeat the Japanese. if you're not part of an outfit, he said, better get out. He said, they're your buddies. Your life depends on them, and theirs depends on you. And if you get mad, take it out after you're back in the United States. But over there, remember, you're part of a team. They will not shoot you. The Japanese will. And that, to me, helped a lot. I'm part of a team. This is part of the team.
What was your impression of the effectiveness of leadership during that campaign? Do you think that your officers and your NCOs did a good job in leading their men, or did they not do a good job?
I thought they did a very good job.
Okay. How did they do a good job? What made them perform well?
Well, they kept coming around to us all the time. Back in the camp, there was officers and there was the enlisted men. Now it was one group. The officers had no trouble coming around us while we're eating K rations or anything else. They stayed in contact, close contact.
Okay. Can you remember any NCOs or officers that you specifically liked or disliked, that you had any run-ins with or anything like that?
Never had any run-ins with any of them.
Okay. You already told me about your buddy Goldie. Did you know of any other... Did you have any other Marines that were your friends or people that you didn't get along with, or any interesting characters at all that you can remember?
Well, one, he was from Missouri. His name was Foot. And, we're going to Iwo Jima. Do you want that now?
We can wait on that for just a second.
Let's wait on that.
What was the most frustrating aspect of fighting on that island, on Saipan?
The most frustrating, I think, was the rations, the food. That's the complaints I heard the most. You ate them to live, and that's the only reason you ate them.
Mm. How did your equipment hold up? Did it work well?
Very good. As long as you took care of it, you cleaned that rifle of yours every chance you got. Same with the big guns.
When you were doing your job that you were assigned to do with modifying the shells, and were you right there next to the gun, or were you?
Oh, yeah.
You were?
Okay. Oh, yeah. 5-6 yards.
Okay. Did those positions receive any shelling from the Japanese?
Once, just once.
Just one time?
Yep.
Were there any casualties at all?
No, there weren't.
Okay. Did your unit take any casualties at any time during the campaign there?
Yeah, one. But I don't know why it come about, but he had got with an infantry unit, and they were pinned down by a bunker, Japanese bunker, and knew him well. Fenton was his name. And he said, somebody's got to do it. And he jumped up and ran right up to it and tossed 2 grenades in. It blew the thing up, of course. He had 28 bullet holes in his body. How do you run that far? You run about 50, 60 yards. Hmm.
His name was Fenton?
Fenton was his last name, Pennsylvania.
Do you remember if he got any kind of a posthumous award for that or anything?
My book would tell me, but I haven't got the book.
That's okay, that's all right.
But his name was listed, I noticed.
All right, Mr. Fouth, we just took a little break there. We're going to move on to Tinian, because we're a little bit confined here with time. I'm just going to ask you what particulars you remember the most about Tinian, and then we'll probably move on to Iwo Jima.
The first night we had got there, dug in, and then the Japanese counterattacked. They came down the road, I can still see it, in column of fours, and they approached our lines. They were ordered to halt, give the password. They squatted down and began to fire. And we opened up, and took about an hour and a half, and then everything was quiet the rest of the night. And the next morning, going out and making sure that everybody was dead and counting the corpses, 221, and we had lost one Marine.
Hmm. You had to go out afterwards and count the bodies?
Oh, yes, and take all their arms off of them, any weapons or grenades and stuff like this. And then the crew came that did the actual burying.
Hmm. Did you ever find any that were just wounded and playing dead?
None.
None?
That was, you always took two for every body. You never approached one alone. I took the soldier's dog tags and his billfold. And after the war, I felt bad about it, so I contacted the Red Cross in Japan, told them about it. They said, send it over. And I did, and they informed me they returned to the widow. There was a picture of a woman and a child in it. They returned it to the widow.
Hmm.
And they said, thank me again.
Hmm.
Then the second episode, because of the Japanese were caught completely by surprise, we swept over the island, and we were ordered the next day to move, and we did. And we set up where we were supposed to. We drove about 3 miles. And then an hour later, here came the infantry. Hmm. We had passed them and didn't know it. We were ahead of them.
Wow.
Thank God we did run into the Japanese.
Hmm.
That was about it for Tinian.
Did your unit use that 75mm pack howitzer on Tinian at all? Did you do any firing with that?
Oh, yes, we did.
Okay.
We did. The moment we had arrived, that we fired for about 2 hours, and then the counterattack came, and then toward morning, we fired again.
Okay.
For another 2-3 hours.
And was that most of it, or how long did that operation on Tinian last?
Roughly about a week.
Okay.
And it was over with. We only, I think, just one other time we set up and fired for a couple, 2-3 hours.
Okay. Were you moving that gun around a lot, or... Did you just stay in one place?
I stayed in one place.
So
once we encamped.
So it had a pretty good range on it. What kind of range does a 75mm?
We figured mostly between 1 and 2 miles. We got shelled the second night from the Japanese. They had a cave. They had a howitzer in of some kind. And they'd run it out in track, shoot, and run back in again. We could see the flashes, and we'd fire back. But took most of the night before that finally got knocked out.
Hmm. What knocked it out?
One of our shells
happened
to hit the spot.
Hmm. Were there any villages or with civilians on Tinian at all, or was it just manned by Japanese
troops? No, there were villages there, but I never got to see any of them.
Okay. Did you run into any civilians at all?
None at all.
Okay. When you landed on Saipan and Tinian also, were there any doubts about whether the Marines would take those islands, or was everybody confident that the islands would be taken?
Not in my mind, there was no doubt, but some of our officers said it's going to be rough going. At first, it was kind of rough going. We caught the Japanese by surprise. Again, the 2nd Marine Division went and decoyed them up at the main city, Garapan, and they put most of their troops up there, and we landed below them. Mm. And so we caught them by surprise. Mm.
How did Marines deal with the enemy soldiers hiding out in the tunnels and the caves? And I'm talking either Saipan or Tinian or even Iwo Jima here. You can...
Well, if it moved, you shot it. If it moved, you shot it. There was no questions asked, no No quarter given at all there.
Okay. Did you develop any tactics at all how to deal with the caves and how they would, you know, hide out in the caves and then come out at night or anything like that? What did the Marines do to deal with that?
All caves, here was the policy, you do not enter them under any circumstances. We're going to use the loudspeakers, we'll isolate the caves and set a guard up, but nobody goes in there. We will dynamite them afterwards. And that's what they did.
After the main campaign was over and the island was considered secure, were there any soldiers that kind of expressed an unwillingness to do the mop-up operations because they didn't want to get killed, or was everybody still willing to do what had to be done?
I never heard no protests. Everybody seemed to go along with it.
Okay. Did you participate in any of the mop-up operations, blowing up caves or?
I went along on some of them, yes.
Okay.
And here's one incident happened. One of the caves we approached, and they had called in with the loudspeaker, and a rifle shot came back. And one of my buddies, his helmet went on the ground. You know, it's a steel helmet with a plastic liner.
Mm-hmm.
And bullet hole through the one side of it. Then the bullet went around and cut the helmet liner in two.
Mm.
Didn't go through his head. And I remember his words, somebody had to be praying for me.
Huh.
I agree.
But he survived with that, huh?
Not a scratch on his head, but that bullet should have gone right through his head.
Wow. What do you think it was that enabled the Marines to just get the job done? What was it, the training that the individual Marine and what he believed, or what enabled them to just keep pushing through battle that was that hard?
Well, as I think I had mentioned previously, their we called it stupidity, but their commitment to their emperor, that their lives could be thrown out there, and for some reason they seemed to believe. There were only twice that I saw any individual Japanese decisions. All of them were made on a mass basis. By yelling and screaming, you could conquer anything. And of course, all it did was cut them off from this world.
What about Marines? How did they push on? What enabled the Marines to keep going through that kind of awful fighting?
Always as individuals, never in a group. You have a buddy only so far away. And by following orders strictly, and be sure to use your head and your eyes and keep your head down. And don't be a hero.
What do you think it was that got you through those battles on those three islands? What enabled you to keep going and get the job done?
Well, from my own standpoint, I believe it was God that ultimately spared me, because I was in enough close ones where I should have been killed even by friendly fire. Now, I don't like that term. I don't think any fighter is friendly, even if a friend shoots you. But I had that happen twice, and by all means, I should have been dead, because the rifle barrel is accidentally discharged was about 2 inches from my chest. And for some reason, something turned me. I can't remember turning. I know I was deaf for an hour afterwards. When that M1 goes off, it's a couple of inches from your nose. You can't hear for a while.
How did that happen? Can you tell me about that incident?
Yes. This buddy of mine, he said, you know, I was sick during bayonet practice. How do you do it? Well, I said, nothing to it. Well, he said, would you show me? So I demonstrated to him how you fix your bayonet and how you fight and counterattack and so forth. And so he said, you mean like this? And he picked up his rifle and put it right under my nose and pulled the trigger. And I couldn't believe I was still alive. I thought I was shot, because it was right up to right below my heart, And I said that I remember something turned me that allowed me for the bullet to go past me. He didn't get no more lessons on bayonet practice.
In the little thing that you filled out here before the interview, it says some hand-to-hand combat. Did you have any experiences with hand-to-hand combat?
No, just in training.
Just in training?
Yeah.
Okay. And you also wrote down search and rescue. Did you do any search and rescue operations?
That was the one I had told you previously about, that Japanese soldier we found up the canyon.
Okay. All right. Now, you mentioned to me that your religion helped you get through.
Yes.
And now, when you were growing up, did you have much exposure to religion at all?
None at all.
None at all?
None.
Your family didn't go to church or anything?
There was no church. I didn't know what a church was.
Did your family talk to you about religion or anything like that, about God? Or
the only thing that they ever mentioned was God had a bunch of commandments. If you didn't keep them, it's too bad. I knew I was lost. Whatever that meant.
Did you go to church at all when you were in training?
Yeah. I went to chapel. I had no idea what it was until I got there.
Did it have any kind of an impact on you at all?
None. Not to start with.
Okay.
Because I just went because I went. That's it.
When you were on the islands, did you have any interaction with chaplains or anything like that?
Oh, yes. Because then I had made that commitment. And so then that was tremendous with the chaplains. And one thing I remember, especially on... That's later on about the chaplains on Iwo Jima. I'll relate that. But their advice and counsel was tremendous.
You can tell me about that now.
All right. Watching the chaplains crawl from foxhole to foxhole, both Catholic and Protestant, and dive in the hole with the men, pray with them, and then crawl to the next hole. I never knew of a chaplain getting hurt. Boy, I'll tell you, that impressed me very much. And so did the men. I'll tell you, they needed it.
Did they pray with just the soldiers that were wounded or dying, or
no,
did they pray with everybody?
Anybody in the foxhole.
Okay. When you were on the islands, did you write any letters home or
on the campaigns? Mm-hmm. No, we were forbidden. We couldn't. They said write them if you want to, but they won't get mailed till you get back to base camp.
Huh. Okay. How do you think it was that your religion helped you while you were fighting? What did it do for you?
The main thing it did for me, when I lost that tremendous hate for the Japanese, I was able to think and function toward human beings. My attitude to the enemy had not changed. I was still dependable. I would shoot anything that threatened my outfit, but I was no longer hateful where they would interfere with my functioning as a human being, is what I think mainly.
So before you had your experience with religion, after, when you told me that story about smoking the cigar and then later on you gave your life to Jesus, before that you had a lot of hatred for the Japanese?
Oh, it consumed every waking hour.
And then afterwards, you didn't... That kind of left you?
I even prayed for the Japanese people.
Okay.
I did take a lot of flack, though, from my buddies because of that. I even told two of them, jumped me once. They said, you know, I don't think you should be on guard. I said, okay, tonight I'm on guard from 11 o'clock till 3 o'clock. I said, you go out there and start crawling. I said, I'll say a halt once. Don't stop. I said, I'll bury what's left of you in the morning. They trusted me after that.
After the major fighting was over, what kinds of emotions did you and your fellow Marines feel like? After the fighting was over on Saipan, Was it a sense of relief, or?
Yeah, a tremendous sense of relief, because I heard quite a few men, especially those who are married, I guess I'll get to see my wife and my, or my sweetheart or my folks, and I said the same thing. I guess I'll get back to Montana again, maybe, and we lived through it. But the relief, the moment, the body,